and welcome to the Wharton FinTech Podcast, the show where we explore the latest trends and innovations in the world of financial technology. I'm your host, Trevor Prince, and today I'm thrilled to have John Becha and Edin Terto as my guests. John is the co-founder and CEO of FS Vector, a regulatory consulting and advisory firm serving clients across the fintech industry. Edin is a managing director at Canaccord Genuity, focused on fintech, financial services, and digital assets. In today's episode, we discuss the founding and development of FS Vector, as well as how John, Edin, and their teams prepared the firm for its first institutional capital raise. We cover their advice for firms exploring similar processes, their outlook on the digital asset and fintech regulatory environment, how FS Vector works with its clients on regulatory and compliance, and much more. John, Edin, welcome to the Wharton FinTech Podcast. Where are you guys calling in from today?
I am up in Massachusetts in a town called Lynnfield, north of Boston.
Good stuff. Edin, how about yourself?
Calling from our office in downtown New York City.
Gotcha. Well, I guess for our listeners that aren't familiar with your guys' backgrounds, would you each mind just quickly going through kind of a background and overview of your careers? John, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, happy to. I've been in financial services forever, a lot of different roles. Lawyer by training, but also worn multiple hats. So I've always been kind of the legal space, done some compliance work, and then also some government relations work, worked for a trade association that represented the larger financial services institutions here in the U.S. And then about 10 years ago, I got pulled into the fintech space for a company called Circle. So thinking about digital assets, Web3, and the use of technology to disrupt financial services space. And so it's there for a number of years before starting FS Vector, which we'll talk about, but it's an advisory firm working with those types of companies. And so, you know, that background of legal compliance, government relations was a good backdrop for what we're doing now.
Gotcha. And Edin, how about yourself?
Yeah, so I've been in the investment banking industry my whole career. I came in to the industry through the pretty traditional channel that I think a lot of your listeners will be familiar with, the on-campus recruiting gauntlet. Started my career as a summer analyst at Bank of America in their energy and power group, and fortunately got invited back to join as a full-time analyst post-graduation, and spent a couple of years there, which was a great place to start my career, build a really strong technical foundation, and work with some really big companies globally on some pretty complex transactions. But ultimately decided I was up for something a bit more growth-oriented and entrepreneurial. So I moved over to an M&A advisory boutique based in New York City that was called Petsky Prunier. M&A advisory shop focused predominantly on the digital economy and tech-enabled services, including software as well. And we had a very good run there. But in 2019, the partners of the firm made a decision that it was time to kind of elevate our capabilities to the next level. And they did a transaction with our current firm, Canaccord Genuity, which we've been a part of ever since, and has definitely expanded our capability set in some interesting ways. So I've had the fortune of working for organizations big and small in this industry. But the thing that I've always enjoyed and liked the most about my career is working with founders and entrepreneurs like John.
Well, I guess, John, pivoting back to you really quickly, for our listeners that may not know the full story behind FS Vector, would you mind kind of discussing in a little bit more detail your decision to start the firm after your time at Circle and how FS Vector's services have evolved and changed over the years?
Yeah, definitely. It's like everything else, it's a long and winding road, and you know, some of it, all paths lead to doing what we're doing today, and that's part of the journey. So, you know, FS Vector now is over 5 years old. Really, my background, like I said, was in financial services, but it really was when I got into fintech and seeing the changes that were happening in financial services was a little bit of the blueprint for FS Vector, you know, and where we operate today. And so it's really that intersection of finance, regulation, and technology. Obviously, financial services has changed quite a bit from the traditional banking and other ways of making payments and getting loans and doing and financial management. And, you know, things are done today over your phone and over an app or over the web, and hopefully in a better way, in a more efficient way for the consumer and the end user. but really that was the kind of impetus behind building the firm in terms of, you know, financial services is so heavily regulated. You look at what's going on with what we have here in the U.S., 50 states with a lot of federal financial regulators. On top of that, you have technology that's always moving faster than regulation. And so that was blueprint for starting FS Vector. And the other piece was, having been a consumer of advisory services, I knew there had to be a better way, right? So you work with outside advisor or a law firm or other service provider, and they tend to be, you know, they provide great advice and they tell you what the risks are, but they don't tell you how to do it. And they don't tell you take a commercial and practical approach. And so that's what we looked to build when we built FS Vector. So like I said, 5 years now, we're 40 plus people. And, you know, the clients that we serve are pretty diverse portfolio of clients. We work with everything in fintech, financial services, traditional banks, through multiple verticals, payments, lending, digital assets, you name it. A lot of the emerging business models like buy now, pay later, and some of these other things, as well as the connectivity between fintech and banks and that bank partnership, which is moving very quickly in that space. We work with companies of all shapes and sizes. So, you know, we work with early stage all the way up to the largest companies. And, you know, we've changed a little bit over the years. When we first started the firm, you know, back in 2020, 2021, when the fintech financing, the VC financing was going gangbusters, we're really involved in helping companies build product, launch products, you know, really kind of emerging businesses, get them up to speed and get them to market. And then over time, what we've done is, you know, we've had a captive client base and we've built off those and leveraged off those products and services. And so, you know, our model is a little unique in that all of our clients are an ongoing monthly retainer. And so we are essentially an embedded partner with our clients. We are there for the long term, where, again, we're looking to help them build and scale a business. Obviously, regulation and compliance is important, but how do we do that in a better, more efficient way? How do we do that to give the companies a competitive advantage? How do we reduce friction for the end user and the product? All those things are at the forefront of what we're doing. And so because we're thinking about a long-term partnership with our client, you know, we have evolved into other products and services. So now we've added staffing, full-time and part-time staffing. We've added training component. We do more around licensing, both acquiring licenses for our clients as well as maintaining those licenses on an ongoing basis. We do a lot of work around transactions, M&A activity. And then the other unique part of our business is we have two main components. One is an advisory firm that does all these things, but we also do public policy and advocacy and lobbying work as well. Because as I mentioned, the key here is regulation is moving so quickly. A lot of questions, both from a legislative perspective at Congress and from the regulatory agencies. And we want to be help our clients be part of that conversation to educate, to move the needle, and to develop the framework to help them, again, go back to how you build the business, reduce those risks, and build a business going forward. And so, you know, and I guess the last thing there is, again, the goal is to create that full service firm, but we also have created a wonderful network around this too to support our clients. And so we have a lot of partners that we work with, which are law firms and banks and RegTech providers and others that also help our clients provide other additional services along the way.
And I guess as you're describing kind of evolving to meet the various needs of your clients, and you have a long tenured relationship with a lot of your clients, has kind of the development of capabilities been reactive or proactive in regards to the new capabilities that you all have launched?
It's a little bit of both. You know, it's a little bit of, I think when you're early stage company, you're doing some experimentation and trying to decide, you know, or understand what the client needs. And again, I think because of our model, the way we work with clients, you know, we're essentially an extension of their team. So we see well within the organization. We understand the finance function, the marketing, and certainly the legal and compliance. But then we, you know, understand what their needs may be, whether it's internal or external. And sometimes companies have more resources internally, and other times they really lean on us to provide that external support. And so I think those learnings from the early days, and we're ongoing, you know, that's an ongoing process, but I think those learnings have caused us to say, all right, here are the other areas where we can provide some support.
both from a high level strategic standpoint and also kind of in the weeds operational support as well. And I think that's another differentiator in terms of our firm is that, you know, we do a lot of that, you know, tactical work as well as the high level strategy.
Gotcha. I guess, Ed, and turning to you, I know you worked with John when Stonegoff Partners invested in their firm. I guess we'll talk about that transaction in a little bit more detail later on, but I guess it would be helpful to understand kind of how your relationship with FS Vector has developed over time. I know relationships in banking can really take a long time horizon to develop, so it would be helpful kind of to understand when FS Vector came on your guys' radar and how that relationship evolved over time.
Yeah, absolutely, and hopefully John will agree with what I'm about to say. But you know, I really think you're kind of catching us in the very beginning part of that dynamic and journey. You know, maybe the top of the second inning, because there's certainly a lot more ahead for the company and opportunities for us to continue collaborating. But we got introduced to the company via one of its founders and foundational investors, Raj Datta, at Fenway Summer in the fall of 2021. And we got to know the company, were invited to present some perspectives and on the options and opportunities that the company might have in the market as they were beginning to contemplate next steps for the business and growth. And I think we formally launched our engagement shortly thereafter. It was probably right around the holidays in 2021. And in some cases, you know, we'll start an engagement with a running start and get out to market very quickly. And our firm is really well resourced and well equipped to do that under certain circumstances. And in other situations, like with FS Vector, you make a tactical call together as partners in a process to, you know, maybe pick a different time to start those conversations. And so we spent the bulk of the following year, 2022, probably the first three quarters of the year, just letting the company grow a little bit into its size. Obviously, the guys at FS Vector are doing an amazing job of expanding into new categories. And for a services business, we're growing very fast, almost, you know, software-like growth there. And in the meantime, we really just focused on two things. One, really sharpening our messaging and our positioning of the business and putting together all the marketing materials that people would expect in an M&A process, but also doing some tactical things that, you know, every company running a process like FS Vector did should be thinking about. Sell-side QOV prep, as an example. And so we got ourselves organized and buttoned up for a post-Labor Day launch in 2022. And you know, ultimately had a transaction closed by Q1. So we're excited to have that success together. But the way that we tend to think of our client relationships in the world more broadly is that this is just the first chapter. And as FS Vector continues to scale with Stonegoff, you know, hopefully there will be an opportunity to work together again, whether it's to raise capital or advise them on the buy side or bring in new investors as they scale.
Great. That's really helpful color. I guess, John, maybe diving into the Stonegoff transaction a little bit deeper, I guess, what would you say the primary reasons and strategic motivations were for seeking outside capital at this time in FS Vector's growth story? And how does this investment kind of align with the overall goals of the firm going forward?
I think this process probably happened a little sooner than I probably would have thought, kind of given, you know, 4 to 5 years into the growth of the company. But I think we saw a real opportunity in the space, and we were starting to get some inquiries into the company, given our brand and what was going on in the marketplace. But again, our goal has always been to be a leader in the space, be premier consulting firm, financial services and fintech, and to offer those services and hopefully be a part of what's happening within the industry and some of these products and services. I think a lot gets lost in, you know, there's a lot of regulatory overhang here and a lot of discussion around, you know, the risks around these products and services, but there are a lot of benefits and there are a lot of exciting things happening within financial services when you talk about, you know, types of products that can provide access to capital, could reach underserved and unbanked communities, could allow for a better way to do payments, access to capital,
better financial planning, management, investing across the board, you know, both for consumers and businesses. And, you know, we all want to be a part of that. And we want to help companies build and scale and figure this out. And of course, the overhang, you know, overlay of this is the many shades of regulation, you know, many shades of gray in the regulation that we need to deal with on a daily basis. But so we looked at, you know, first good decision we made was hiring Canaccord. But after that, you know, when we looked at what was happening out there and the need for capital, again, it went back to this idea that we want to grow, and we want to grow in a smart fashion and take advantage of the opportunities here. And that capital is important, not only the financial capital, but the intellectual capital. So having a partner like Stone Goff gives us a strategic partner to think these things through, to provide a little more discipline in terms of way we're doing things. But it does a few other things. It allows us to attract top talent. And we've done probably one of the best things we've done to date is get really good people. And that's the key for our business. It is a relationship-based business, and it's advisory services. And we have a beautiful mix of folks that have been in industry. We have the senior advisor network of former regulators, including my co-founder, Raj Date, who was a former head of the CFPB as the acting director there. And others who've led other agencies such as the SEC and the OCC and the whole alphabet soup of regulatory agencies in DC and beyond, as well as the state level. And so, you know, we're looking to acquire top tier talent and continue to do so, and to find people who can build and continue to create a wonderful culture within the firm. We also want to reach new clients and new verticals. And I think this deal and this capital allows us to do that. It allows us to expand our referral partners. But then the biggest thing is it allows us to look at additional potential acquisitions, potential partners, other products and services that we can be delivering. We don't want to grow just for the sake of growth. We want to do so in a way that's, accretive to our business, but also more importantly, it provides value to our clients. And so are there other services that can provide value to our clients? As we think about long-term partnerships, we think about this life cycle of the client's business and relationship. And so we want to be there for the ride. And whether it's, you know, early stage client is how do you get to market? What are the licensing? What are the partnerships you need? Or if you're a mature later stage company, how do you drive efficiency? How do you scale? What third-party technology will help you build your business? And things like that. And so you've seen it already in some of these newer services that we've implemented, whether it's on the staffing side or training or otherwise. And we want to continue to do so. And having a great partner like Stone Goff allows us to do that.
Great. That's really helpful color. I guess maybe opening up the floor to both of you, and you talked a little bit about kind of preparing the firm for launch, and kind of some of the logistical aspects of the process. What would be helpful to hear both of your perspectives on some of the key insights you learned from going out to market, maybe kind of preparation during the process afterwards, and any advice you might have for other firms kind of exploring similar processes?
Yeah, well, I often joke about this. Our process was bookended by the collapse of FTX on the front end and SVB on the back end. It was interesting timing. We definitely learned a lot about the resiliency and the importance of what FS Vector does, because the firm was able to sustain its growth through those turbulent times. But also in some respects, I think it highlighted just how critical of a partner FS Vector is, particularly around the SVB dynamic. What we saw in the wake of that news was FS Vector's clients not retreating, but actually leaning into their relationship with FS Vector and almost asking them for advice on treasury-related issues, which is not really FSV's business model, but given their connectivity and knowledge of the banking landscape, they were able to, you know, create a lot of critical value in the moment for their customers. But I think, you know, and John should speak to this, for us, we are so focused on working with growth companies, whether they're software businesses or services businesses. We have a very good sense of what the diligence focus areas are going to be, and we're able to size up pretty quickly up front what the strengths and weaknesses of our clients' businesses are, so that they're, you know, ultimately prepared to answer those questions. Because
you know, every process has its wrinkles, and the best processes are those where you're sufficiently prepared to address them. And so, you know, we kind of have that playbook as a form of institutional knowledge, and we spend a ton of time up front educating our clients on how they should be talking about their business, how they should be organizing the data and the KPIs that reflect the growth and the health of the business, and how to ultimately talk about, you know, opportunities for optimization and growth. So that's always a learning journey for everyone at the table, but we love having the role of educator in some respects to, you know, help, especially first our clients like John and his team, who are taking on their first round of true institutional capital, helping them understand what the process is going to look like and really preparing them for it.
John, anything to add there?
Yeah, no, I mean, I had no idea what to expect going into this process, and it certainly was a long process, but I think it was a great learning process, and ultimately, obviously, we had a great result out of it. I think, you know, the advice I would give is that, you know, going into this, you really need to understand who you are and what you want to be at the end of the day and why you're doing this. But I think what was really interesting to me and really helpful is this whole, you know, going through this transaction really helped us to become more disciplined and think about, you know, I think we knew what our general strategy was, we knew what our product set was, but it really helped us become more disciplined as a company, and be able to deliver that message. And then, you know, from a long-term perspective, to be able to hopefully execute on it. But we became a lot more disciplined on the operational side, thinking through, you know, as Ed had mentioned, around the data set, like the client data, the information, how we track KPIs, what those KPIs should be, as well as the financial planning and management. On the products and services, really, again, became more refined in terms of what those products are, what we want them to be, what we call them modules, which are, you know, various discrete sets of, you know, the services that we offer to our clients. So really understanding, defining those, how we're going to market those, how we're going to deliver those. So equally as important as, you know, the product itself is the delivery and the efficiency of the delivery to the client. And then really understanding, you know, our people and our culture and, you know, what the gaps are, but what the strengths are. And I think, like I said, I think that's been the secret sauce of FS Vector around the culture that we've created, and the fact that we've given people autonomy. We've hired people who are commercial minded and take a real proactive approach, work very closely with our clients on a day-to-day basis, but understanding what additional resources we want long-term there and how we can best continue to create that culture. And then from a partner perspective with, you know, ultimately Stone Goff, but as we just talked to other firms, it was really important in terms of being aligned around these things, being aligned on the culture, especially, you know, really having a similar approach on things, and really being aligned as well as on the strategic vision, and having someone that understood our business, that wanted to work with us on these things. And so a lot of great lessons learned, ultimately a great result. And I think, you know, the other thing is post-transaction, that's where the work really begins. And so I think we've seen it's been a great result in terms of the way we work with our partner. But I would give the advice of, you know, just having good governance, open lines of communication, and really leveraging, I think, your partner. You know, it's not, again, just not just financial, it's not just capital. You have a lot of resources. You have someone now who cares about your business, is working with you day in and day out. And I think that's essential in terms of being successful over the long term.
That relationship with Stone Goff, and also just more broadly, I guess, John, what excites you most about the future of FS Vector following the transaction?
Oh, a lot of things. I mean, I think I'm very bullish in terms of where we are. I mean, from an FS Vector perspective, you know, we have built this incredible engine now to, you know, we understand, we've all these products and services. We have great clients that are working with us on we've had long-term relationships. We have a great network, as I mentioned, in terms of referral partners and what I like to call the Vectorverse of folks that we work with, and that we can provide a lot of,
help our clients navigate a lot of novel issues and challenging issues on the regulatory side. And so we have the team in place to do a lot of different things, whether it's on the advisory side or on the policy side. So I think we built that mousetrap, and now it's really about executing, as I mentioned, in terms of continuing to grow, to go on to down these other paths. There's plenty of opportunity out there from an external standpoint in terms of what's going on in financial services and fintech. And I would say that's the other exciting piece that, we've seen a little bit bumps in the road. There's been some headwinds in terms of fintech financing. There's been some regulatory pressures. But ultimately, there still is a ton of opportunity and excitement in terms of utilizing technology to provide a better product for the end user, for consumer and businesses within financial services. And so hopefully we can be a part of that in terms of helping these companies continue to get to market, continue to grow. And you're seeing now this convergence within financial services. And so, I think the terms fintech and banks and, we might have to come up with another term over the long haul here, because banks are more and more banks are working directly with fintechs. You heard the term banking as a service, and that's industry, and that kind of approach is continuing to build. I think whereas we for a while we've had only a dozen to two dozen banks doing it, now I think it's up to 300, 400 banks in the next few years will be doing this, and billions and billions of dollars of revenue. And so you're seeing this a little bit of the blurring of the lines, but ultimately, again, hopefully it's moving in the right direction in terms of being able to help innovation move forward. And then on the policy side, I think we're working through some of the issues there and getting a little more clarity, but I think there's more work to be done there.
Gotcha. I guess maybe pulling on the Vectorverse thread a little bit more. You mentioned kind of the blurring of the lines in the industry more broadly. Have you seen that play out in the types of firms that are coming to you all for your services? Has your kind of average client changed or evolved over time in relation to that, or I guess other industry trends?
Yeah, what's interesting about our client base, like I said, is intentionally diverse. And so we work with a lot of different wide range of clients. It also requires us to have a lot of wide-ranging talents on our team, and we do to cover a lot of ground, whether it's different regulatory risk areas or different business types. But the technology does lead to, I think we're seeing a lot of evolution within products and services and a lot of different verticals. Financial services touches it. There is this blurring of commercial and finance, and every business wants to have some type of financial services product or payment, so you see like buy now, pay later, or you see things like Apple Pay, and you see, Amazon and all these other folks, and even like Elon Musk wants X to have a embedded payments platform, right? So everybody wants some type of financial services component, and, that creates, those are regulated, right? And so a lot of that is still a work in progress. A lot of that is, we see a lot of excitement, but there's also a lot to develop in terms of use cases, digital asset space especially. I think that is still evolving in terms of what the use cases are there. But once we start seeing those use cases, I think we'll see more and more take off quite a bit.
Gotcha. That's helpful. I guess moving away from FS Vector and the transaction to the market more broadly, John, I'd be interested to hear your perspective. I know you spoke at the Wharton FinTech Conference in the spring about the crypto regulatory environment. I'd be interested to hear kind of how you've seen that evolve, both in crypto and fintech more broadly, and then I think maybe how that might impact some of your clients, and also how it might impact kind of the interest for them, I guess, for investors potentially looking at them. Eden would appreciate hearing your perspective on that as well.
Yeah, definitely. As I mentioned earlier, I started in the crypto space at 2013, so over 10 years in. But when I started, I remember the CEO of Circle, Jeremy Allaire, said this is about a 20-year cycle. And so we're about halfway in, and we've gone through some growing pains. And I think in some aspects, we've learned a lot. We've had some clarity and some certainty, and we've gotten through things like
FTX and some of these other banks, Silvergate and Signature and others. But in other aspects, there's still a lot of uncertainty and areas that we need to focus on. I think on the regulatory side, we're still seeing a lot of regulation by enforcement. You know, the SEC is still clamping down on what they deem as unregistered securities and tokens and others that are being offered outside the regulatory space. We see other agencies looking to, you know, the banking regulators really concerned about what's happening or going on through the banking system, and still a little bit of clamp down there. We see groups like the, or regulatory agencies like the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau mentioned that they will have examination authority, as they do have under their statute, but they will exercise that authority over some of the larger crypto businesses and digital asset businesses. And so, and then the IRS has also come out with some rules and has been concerned about that they're not getting their cut of what's going on in this space. And so, you know, they sent out some summons to get information on customers from large exchanges. They've issued some other rules on some of the information that they're looking to get to make sure that these transactions are being reported accordingly. But, you know, I do see also raise a light here. You know, as I mentioned, you know, we are starting to see some more crystallization on the use cases. We're seeing a lot more discussion in Congress around legislation, whether it's stablecoin legislation or otherwise. We're seeing some of these court cases being resolved. You know, there's some court cases around the authority of SEC and other agencies. And, you know, we're seeing the SEC taking action to allow ETFs, which have underlying digital assets involved. So, you know, I think for our clients, I see some optimism going into 2024. I think, you know, if we can continue to get clarity on the regulatory side, you know, the technology evolves. There's certainly a lot of investment, a lot of excitement still in the space. And so cautiously optimistic, but, you know, still a lot of questions.
Ed, and I know you mentioned the FS Vector process kicked off with the fall of FTX and ended around the fall of SVB. It would be helpful to understand your perspective on, you know, as you approach fundraising or M&A process, how to manage or prepare for any regulatory issues or potential regulatory overhang for a business going to market.
Yeah, I mean, you have to have a really buttoned up perspective about what regulatory exposure your business model has. And so as a part of my fintech coverage effort that encompasses the digital assets ecosystem, and our firm is actually quite active in that space. And so that's an area where we are really focused on understanding kind of the licensing and compliance processes, procedures, and standing of the companies we ultimately choose to work with. I think of all the different verticals that we cover, digital assets would be one where we probably overinvest upfront time doing our own due diligence and understanding that. But you can't go into a process without engaging with counsel, inside or outside, or both maybe, to really have buttoned up memos around not only your, you know, your current standing and you know, issues related to your commercial business, but also, you know, any potential implications associated with a transaction. You know, if you have a license to do money transmission or to run an exchange in a particular geography, you know, do those licenses survive a transaction? Are they transferable? Do they require consent from regulators? And doing some upfront prep to really understand yourself what that process will look like. But then also, as you get later in the process, educating, you know, prospective investors or buyers of the company about those dynamics. In the case of FSV, I mean, the argument that we made to the market was sort of maybe a contrarian one, but we were basically saying all of this was great for the business. And I think the continued performance of the company kind of proves our case, which is that the foundation of FSV was ultimately about helping high growth companies that maybe didn't have the level of, you know, sophistication and compliance infrastructure of a, you know, multi-decade old large cap public company, figure out what to do in these very dynamic and rapidly evolving regulatory waters. And so, you know, some of the pressure or pushback that we maybe got from prospective investors was, you know, will clients spend, sustain something like FTX collapsing?
And you know, what I think the data proved out was that it made what FS Vector does even more critical and kind of bumped it up the spend hierarchy for their customers. And so, you know, we obviously are focused on the storytelling piece of the equation, but the data's got to line up. And as we've discussed earlier on this podcast, that's something we spend a ton of time doing is really, you know, confirming and validating our positioning with the data to ultimately back it up.
John, beyond digital assets, it might be helpful to get an understanding of your view of any concerning developments in the broader fintech market recently or that you see coming on the horizon.
Yeah, I think just the regulatory environment continues to be very challenging. Like I said, there's a lot of enforcement. There's a lot of authority that's been expanded by agencies like the CFPB. There's been a lot of pressure on bank partnerships and banking as a service in terms of, you know, you see some enforcement, you see some additional guidance and some more pressure there on banks that are already under a lot of pressure in terms of holding assets that are underwater on their books and in this rate environment and whatnot. So it's, you know, challenging from a banking perspective, it's challenging from a fintech perspective in terms of really understanding the rules of the road for some of these different types of business models. Those are all things that kind of concern us in terms of where the regulations are going. And then, you know, the failure of legislators and others to act in light of that. We are seeing some, though, like I said, maybe turn a little bit positive. We're seeing some more clarity internationally. We're seeing more regulation. I don't think all this kind of pressure or emphasis on regulation is a bad thing, because the industry has asked from day one to be regulated, but, you know, we just need to know what the rules of the road are. And so it's okay. You know, a preference is to have some kind of guidance that's well thought out. There's a collaborative effort. There's education needed on both sides, but rules that are balanced and that obviously protect against the risks but allow for the innovation to thrive within financial services. And so, you know, hopefully going to 2024 we can get there. But, you know, I think these rules also need to be principles-based. Technology is always moving faster than regulation. I would also just end with, you know, there's are a couple of rules that are out there to be a little more prescriptive when you talk about rules or limits on caps on lending, where you talk about limits on interchange fees for debit cards, things like that. You know, we have to think through those a little more in terms of what the impacts are, again, on these businesses.
Gotcha. Well, I guess just to wrap up, we like to end the podcast on a more jovial or relaxed note. So we'll do a quick lightning round with the both of you. Just some lighthearted questions to kind of end it. I'll pose a question and then maybe John, quick, you know, one or two word answer, and then Ed and we'll go to you, and then I'll just kind of move on to the next question if that works. So I guess to start, talking or texting?
Talking. Old school.
Texting. But only as far as work is concerned, only in a compliant fashion for those that may be listening.
Of course, of course. Favorite day of the week?
Well, it's got to be weekend day, right? Saturday. If it's a work day, it's Friday.
I'm going to go with Friday. That late afternoon, early evening, end of the week feeling is a good one.
Favorite holiday?
Thanksgiving for me. No pressure by gifts. Eat a lot. Nothing wrong with that.
Same here. I love everything about it.
All right. Final question will be, what's your favorite city in the U.S. other than the one that you live in?
Well, our office is in Washington, D.C., and I've always been a big fan of there, and I lived down that way for a few years. So D.C.'s great.
This one's tough. There are so many good ones.
You better say Boston.
It's definitely not Boston.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Shots fired.
I thought Trevor said cities, not towns. So I don't know if Boston counts.
All right.
I went to school in Nashville, so I'll shout out Nashville.
Strong choice.
Gotcha. Well, a fiery end to a great episode, but John, Eden, appreciate you both coming on to the Word and Fintech podcast.
course. Right. Thank you, Trevor. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Warden FinTech Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review and give us a follow on social media. We appreciate the support and hope that you'll continue to spread the word to more listeners. If you'd like to keep up with all the content from our FinTech community, please subscribe to our podcast channel and find us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Medium at Warden FinTech. There, you'll be able to find articles, interviews, and much more analyzing all aspects of the FinTech industry. As always, thank you to our editor, Rafa Osteria. And until next time, this is your host, Trevor Prince.